Well, my guest tonight at the big table is the host and senior editor of Chicago Tonight Week in Review, which airs every Friday night on WTTW. Joel Weissman has been the face of the program for 39 years. It's the longest-running news program in Chicago, and it brings together journalists and media professionals to hash out what the heck happened throughout the week in news. Weissman has a long history in Chicago broadcast and news. Outside of the 39 years with Week in Review, he's also known to many as a political commentator for WGN-TV. He did that for a while. He's also served as a metro editor at the Chicago Sun-Times. He's a Midwest correspondent for the Washington Post. Weissman also has his own law firm where he represents television media personalities. He's been doing that work for over four decades. Joel Weissman, a lifelong Chicagoan, my guest tonight at the big table. Joel, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
It's good to see you outside the TTW studio. So talk about this. I mean, I didn't realize this. I was looking up the research and looking at different things. It's the longest running show in Chicago news. I mean, the idea of 39 years. What's that mean to you that you've been able to be on the air since, what, 1978?
Means I was able to keep a job, and I think the reason is because I'd only go in there once a week, so they couldn't really get to know how bad I was.
Come on. But the idea of, I mean, it's how news shows, news programming, the television business, it's all changed. But the idea to be a consistent voice for in weekly, daily, whatever it is, but for four decades, there's something about that. And talk about what it means to have that kind of consistency in a business that is known for its inconsistency.
Well, I take a lot of pride in the fact that it has been consistent. And, you know, when I started that show, television was mostly for pretty people. And you had to be good looking or handsome. I didn't meet either of those tests. That's why I went to public television. But the truth is, what we wanted to do was provide analysis, not just report the news, but analyze what it meant. And at the same time, try to say, because of what it meant that day, what it was, how it was going to play out in the months or years ahead. Now that's a pretty common format.
Right.
You see it a lot on the cable channels. There's a panel for everything. But we've found four people. It was patterned after Washington Week in Review, and that show had four people, and each of them had a different beat. One covered the White House, one covered the Pentagon, one covered Congress. I forget what the fourth one covered. And they used to, and they tried to have us do the same thing, to get together like on Thursdays and say what we were going to talk about that Friday in a phone conference, and then have each of the people ask a question of the person who was reporting on his beat.
Yeah,
we tried that for a couple of weeks. Didn't work at all.
Didn't work.
And we didn't have four regular people, so we always had different guests, but sometimes those guests more often than others.
Well, that's always been the strength to me over time watching Week in Review is the fact that you can get people from the Tribune, the Sun-Times, from newscasts, from others to come together and talk about the news from their experience.
What happened that was interesting is when we started it, it was only newspaper people. But as time wore on, we got people like you, the electronic media, to join in. And then when we first started, you know, we were super serious and we didn't include sports. And then eventually we also included sports every week.
That's my favorite part.
Yeah, mine too, actually, because that's where you can really kind of fool around.
Well, I mean, I think about it, it's nice to know it's patterned, but in 1978, I mean, I would think that there's not a lot of panel shows at that time. I mean, maybe in a different way. Now you think about it and you mentioned, I mean, that's the format of a CNN.
No, at the time there were no straight impartial shows. They were partisan shows. You might have a reporter or two interviewing a newsmaker. And the four television stations did have that. I think one was called Target News and one was called City Desk. And they'd have one guest and one interrogator or perhaps two. And in fact, that was the first time I was ever in electronic journalism. I would be invited to be a guest to grill some of these people.
What did you learn from those experiences that you took to Week in Review, the idea of being in those shows that you improved on the format?
Well, what I learned was that if you don't get an answer, you got to keep asking. And I also learned that, you know, once the red light is on, they have to talk. Otherwise, they just say the same thing over and over and over again. And so you could keep firing the questions, and you'd usually get some kind of an answer. And then when you have a whole panel, I would ask if someone else would agree with that answer. And before you know it, a genuine discussion might erupt.
You know, I think about there's so, and I want to talk about this throughout the hour, just the idea of the art of being able to moderate a panel. Because I've done it in forums. I'll have these chairs on election night or all filled. It is a difficult thing to be able to swivel. I mean, you have to move your head. You have to make sure everybody's included. But most importantly, you're running against the clock.
Absolutely right. And one of the biggest problems is to, A, make sure that everybody gets involved, and particularly on television. So if you have the sports guy sitting there for 25 minutes and you have a 30-minute show, everybody's saying, what's that guy doing there? Who is that guy? So we'll usually pull them in early. And the other thing is you want to try to, if you can, kind of distribute the time evenly. And so you get a chance to say, well, do you agree with that? Or, well, what about this so-and-so after the first person has spoken? And it just kind of flows naturally after you've done it this long. But it's important to make sure that there's inclusion. And it's important to tell the guests that they're not giving a book report. They're supposed to join in.
Right. Well, what I love about it, and Week in Review always shines to me when everyone's takes a topic and all four panelists are working, you're working the questions, you're moving it in. There's no doubt about it. That's the best when you have it going on. But what you are working against the clock, it's a 25-minute show or whatever it is, and there's so much material that you throw out there. Yeah. I guess the question is, when do you know to move on?
You're an editor on the fly, and there are two ways of judging it usually. One is if it's an important story, you're going to give it as much time as it reasonably can get. And if it's a less important story, you're going to kind of race through it. But if it's a story, even if it's important and the discussion dies down and you have four people agreeing, you know it's time to move along. So what I have is like a little cheat sheet, and I have extra subjects I can introduce if we've exhausted the ones we have. And I'll just on the fly omit some of those that we don't have time for. So I prioritize the stories.
And as Ro and Anna said, as you know, you're famous for a very unique way of getting people to shut up if they're talking too long, and that might be a little bit of a kick under the table. Is that true?
That's absolutely untrue. Ro has always tried to depict me as a violent man. It's not true.
But
we do use some hand signals, hopefully the camera doesn't pick them up.
There you go.
And I just try to, if they're going slow or we're winding up, I'll kind of take my hands in a circular motion.
We get it right from the source. That's good. Joel Weissman, my guest tonight. He's the host and senior editor of Chicago Tonight Week in Review, which can be seen on WTTW Channel 11 every Friday night, 7 o'clock. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk more with Joel Weissman here at the Big Table. Stay with us. All right, back in the studio here on the download, 720 WGN. Joel Weissman's my guest at the Big Table, a longtime host of Chicago Tonight Week in Review. 39 years. I realized we could have waited a couple more months. We could have got a 40th anniversary story out of you.
January.
There you go. It's amazing to me because as we were talking about the format and the idea of how television news has changed, one thing that Chicago Tonight Week in the Review really relies on is journalists. Journalists to come in studio to analyze, to give you their thoughts on the stories they've been covering. And one of the strengths of the show is how diverse it is and the people that you ask to be on the program. As we see this onslaught of almost this attack on journalists, on news, mainstream media, the New York Times, you know, all the way down the line from politicians and the like, what's your take on that? I mean, the idea of whether or not journalists are storytellers, are they analysts, should they give their opinion? Let's have a conversation about that. Like, what do you think about where we're at and the way the country views journalists?
Well, in the newspaper news columns and on many online news sources, if it's news, what you're doing is giving facts, not opinions. What's happening is that we've gotten a little bit of a blend of that, and I must say that other panel shows have been to blame for some of that, because what you have is, in addition to news people on the panels, you have partisans on the panel,
right.
Spokesmen for each of the parties, and then you have the moderator and usually two news people and two partisans, and that's not even analysis. What that is spinning, and you have two partisans spinning. And two news people and a moderator trying to hold their feet to the fire. And frankly, a lot of times they don't do a very good job of it.
That's a great point. I mean, the idea that CNN and MSNBC and Fox and other places have taken what Americans have known to be a place for journalists to talk about the stories and put partisan politics in its place. And we haven't really noticed. I mean, I'm a pretty literate guy. I understand the media and how it works, but there are a lot of times that I am thinking that as a journalist up there and it's
not. Well, it can creep up on you. And in part of it is that it's become entertainment. So it's newfotainment, if you would. And the people who yell the loudest and the people who dress the flashiest often get the most attention who don't comb their hair or whatever. And so one of the things, and this is not a commercial for our show, but, you know, we don't have partisans on. And a lot of times we say things that might inflame one party or another. They ask to come on so they can give their side. Well, their side is not welcome on our show. Only the analysis of what they say and the reportage of the facts of what they're saying.
For all the panelists that you have on, do you find some panelists in the old school form of not wanting to opine on something or to
yes.
just give the facts, and you want to push them to like, what do you think on that? And they don't want to go there?
That's true. Some of them are afraid to give their opinions. And the reason I ask for their opinions is because theoretically they should be nonpartisan opinions, unbiased opinions. Just as a reporter by definition is a trained observer. So what's your opinion of what you've observed? And I'm not afraid to do that because what we really do is have an internal fact check, because you have these other unbiased people
that are on the panel
right. that are going to pull these people back in if they're giving a partisan opinion.
You know, I think about that concept, the concept of the panel show that you see on CNN or MSNBC and the partisans getting involved. And you also think about the journalism schools and the way that students are coming through the feeders to say, okay, well, I want to be that. I want to be on CNN. I want to be whoever's the host of the nighttime show. Do you see that sort of being a trickle effect in the way that more and more people are getting into the business to do that as opposed to the facts-only newspaper reporter stuff that you've known throughout your career?
Well, yeah, I think there is a lot of that. And part of it is the nature of the business as it is now. For instance, when I was a newspaper reporter, over time you would develop sources. And if you stayed in one market, you could gather up quite a number of them. Young reporters today often don't have sources. And part of it is because there's a lot of pressure on them to produce things quickly. And, and unfortunately, if it leads, it bleeds, particularly on local television. You know, you're going to have maybe 5, 6, 8 stories that are violence-oriented. They're terrible stories, but they're not that meaningful to the people that they don't affect, but they're life-shattering for those that they do. So you don't get necessarily the chance to really analyze them or develop sources that can tell you what this trend really means.
Well, it's also interesting because we see this attack on sources, and a lot of it is the government sources that we're seeing that are populating the
right.
pages of the New York Times or the Washington Post. And it almost feels like the way it's being spun is that it's new. The concept that,
right.
that, you know, this thing leaked out, we got to take care of this, is brand new. They hate the Trump administration. But that's not necessarily the case. You go back generation to generation. That's how a lot of people covering politics
get their
stories.
Reporters have always relied on leaks and sources, and many times, in an untruthful way, even lifting up documents that they shouldn't have their hands on, and, you know, kind of anything to get the story. From the front page days here in Chicago.
Right.
So there's nothing really the matter with sources. But from the other side, I mean, if some of these people are breaking the law internally by leaking things, they should be prosecuted. And the one who prosecuted the most of them was Obama.
Right.
Not really Trump, even though he's complained the loudest.
He's complained the loudest, but you're right. I mean, there has been in modern politics seems to be a movement to crack down on the idea of the anonymous source or being able to have this relationship with reporters. When you think about that coupled with the idea of this attack on the integrity
yeah.
of the industry.
Yeah, that's a very, very disturbing thing. The press has always been an easy whipping boy. And the old Mayor Daley here, Richard J. Daley, used to berate the press constantly, and he'd get great results from doing that. And whatever he'd say, people would believe, and they would always say that you can't trust the press, they're bad people, on and on and on. But right now, you know, when the president comes out so overtly, some people everybody's the president. The president deserves a certain amount of respect, and you're used to a president telling the truth until recently. If he says the press lies and cheats and shouldn't be believed, it carries a little bit more weight. And if he's got these loyal supporters, as Trump does, those supporters want to believe and swallow everything that he says. And so you get this whole segment of society that does not trust us.
Even just listening to you, talking about old man Mayor Daley, this concept of, this is not new. There have been, I think about his son too, the incessant complaints about the media getting the story wrong. Maybe because of social media, it's changed the way that they can, but this is not new where the government.
If I could take you back, I used to teach law school, and, the free press was envisioned as a series of pamphleteers. Each person would print his own pamphlet. So if somebody said something you didn't like, you'd print your pamphlet contradicting that. And then when we had way more newspapers, papers were openly, Republican or Democratic.
Right, right.
Right here in this building, who could have been more Republican than Colonel McCormick?
Right.
But in today's setup, you don't have the lesser voice getting equal time or equal space.
Right. Joel Weissman is my guest. He is the host and senior editor of Chicago Tonight Week in Review, which airs every Friday night on WTTW. We'll take a break at tonight's news, and we'll continue our conversation with Joel here on The Download. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the big table, Joel Weissman, the longtime host of Chicago Tonight Week in Review, which can be seen Friday nights. I'm excited because I love the show, and I've been on it, which is awesome. And it's great to have you in studio, not all suited up in the bright lights where we get to see you at Channel 11. So always good. Let's talk about I want to talk about the news business. And there was a couple pieces that came out. Rob Feeder had both of them. One was, the end of the era of News Blues, where the editor came out and had a lot of things to say about where the news business has gone wrong. And then he also had a report about how less people are watching the 10 o'clock news. From your vantage point as being a Chicago media personality for the years that you have, do you see a future for the 10 o'clock news, for those kind of programs that are on terrestrial channels that are reaching certain audiences? Or at a certain point, are they going to have to change the model?
I think what's happening now is they actually are changing the model. And they're changing it in part by kind of almost merging, blogging and tweeting in with the regular newscasts. I don't see a terribly bright future. I wouldn't advise someone to go into conventional journalism, as it were, unless they could go into all these connective fields. Part of it's their own fault. It's not just the internet. Part of it is what they're offering up. Is it important? And is it compelling to watch? And one of the, I talked about this earlier, when you have so much crime, if that's your the only news in Chicago. And one of the reasons they do that, it's cheap and it's easy to cover. And, a lot of times you don't need sources. All you need is a camera. And the way the business is changing a lot of in loads of cities. The reporters are shooting these things all by themselves. They're editing them all by themselves. And then they're talking, they're podcasting about them. They're blogging about them. And that's cheap. You got five different landing places for this piece of cheap news, and so it's that offering is not great. There's very little analysis in conventional news of the 10 o'clock news or for a lot of regular terrestrial radio, and there's not a lot of personality because a lot of these television, particularly. These people are schooled by consultants who want the same thing. If you go and see, with the exception of my client Tom Skilling, you go look for a weather report anywhere across the country, They're all the same.
I mean, it's interchangeable. I mean, you hear the – I will say this, that you'll hear a ton of people who were maybe in Chicago, lived here, and then moved to other places. And they will ultimately always say that the quality and the value of the news, the 10 o'clock news in Chicago, is better than everywhere. There's a vibe here that you're
I would agree with that. And we have some awfully talented people here. But being better than everywhere may not be the standard that all these young viewers are wanting.
You know, I think about what do young viewers want. I mean, we're not the two equipped guys to talk about that. But I will say that.
Well, you are.
Yeah, but, I mean, you think about CNN and MSNBC and the kind of way we talked about in the first half, this partisan news and the way that they've spun it to be much more about the spin than it is about the facts and even analysis. But then I think about a new generation of shows that are almost like I think of Anthony Bourdain. You know, or the Vice Channel, which is HBO does Vice, but these documentary style shows that do a little bit more film. They seem to take a little bit more energy in telling a story or having the personality tell the story and give their point of view. I mean, there is some innovation in news, and I wonder if at some point or another the barriers will be broken down when it comes to cheap, quote, you know, what it takes to put this stuff together, and we'll see the product change.
It's possible that we will, but more likely what's going to happen is you're going to have a whole bunch of different offerings that come under the grand umbrella of news.
Right.
I mean, if you want to call Anthony Bourdain news, be my guest. I call it eating, or I call it travel-logging.
Sure.
And you don't really get a lot of news. You might find out some interesting facts about the places he goes or the recipes.
Right.
And there are other things that are more long-form and documentary, if you will, in nature. You know, public television, I hate to, you know, be a trumpet
for
us.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, we've managed to walk that line pretty well in terms of giving some substance and news and history. But it's a tough landscape out there, and you're going to have all kinds of offerings. And I don't think anybody can say they're informed by just turning on the news at 10 o'clock.
Well, I mean, in this day and age, too, you talk about the stories that are covered at 10 o'clock. If you are at all paying attention, your media diet is Twitter or other places.
Right.
You already know those stories before you even get to 10 o'clock.
Right, and if you want to look for opinion on the web, you go to an aggregator or a news aggregator and all these columnists and everything. So there's lots of places to go. So you have to be a little entrepreneurial in your quest of this information. And unfortunately, some people don't want to have that full plate, and they go to their one favorite or two favorite sites.
You know, having you in studio, Joel, to talk about news is great. And it reminds me, too, that one of the reasons I do go to news and the shows that I want to watch is because I am attracted to the personality. I want to know about the stories and the news that you've covered, and you use that experience in a nonpartisan way to inform the story that you're talking about. You're essentially, do you see yourself that way as an analyst, as a broadcaster, as someone who's been a former newspaper editor, that you are a storyteller, that you do take all the information that you've accrued throughout your years and you're able to display it when you can?
Well, I try to. I mean, some people might think it's arrogant when you hearken back to how something today is similar to something that happened back in Richard J. Daley's time. But I think it is nice to have a frame of reference. And unfortunately, in the news business, too many people move around. And so people don't have that experiential history for a real long time.
You sitting in the seat that you sit in as the moderator of Chicago Week in Review, I mean, you are getting a steady diet of Chicago news. I mean, every single Friday you are putting out 15, 20, 25 stories that your panels are talking about. You know, and I don't think it's arrogance at all, but the idea to look back and to talk about covering in the same way in 1978 the news of Chicago like you are in 2017. Has the city changed? I mean, do you see the same stories? Is it kind of like looking through the Matrix where you're like, it's the same cycle of stories that just keep coming back and keep coming back?
In many ways, it is exactly that. But in some ways, it's different. Look, the city's population has changed. The innovation, the politicians are not nearly as open as they used to be. They're very, very cautious. There's lots and lots of barriers to get to them. They feel that just by issuing a statement, they're accessible. So in many ways, it's much more battened down. But in terms of what goes on with the corruption, it just takes on, the faces change, but they're still all going to jail. The federal trials continue. The violence is upticked enormously.
Well, you're a good guy to ask this question. I mean, there'll be an argument in the news or from people in Chicago that say, is the violence uptick or is the media now covering violence? Meaning, you know, now it's every day and it's everything there. But in 1978, there were more murders in Chicago. We just weren't talking about it.
It's true. I mean, part of it is, but I do think it's upticked. I think it's upticked that there are more incidents. We tend to always look at the murder rate, and you're right. Back in the 70s, there were more murders, but also there was less good medical care and response. So a lot of these people who died then
aren't
might
dying
be saved.
Now, right.
And what's happened is, you're right, we do tend to cover it more often than we did then and give it more time and space. It's more time. It's more electronic. It's not the newspapers as much.
Right.
I mean, you can compress a whole night's television news into a half a column in a newspaper, and sometimes they do that, and yet it's the full newscast.
Right.
And one of the reasons they gravitate toward is what I was saying before. It's cheap and it's easy to do.
Joel, you mentioned earlier that your client's Tom Skilling. You have other clients. You are a media represent media personalities on television with your law firm, and you've been doing that for four decades as well. And I want to ask you, just, you know, because they used newscasters on the 10 o'clock news. I mean, they were Chicago celebrities. They still are, but I mean, their paychecks sort of said that they were, and the way that they were. There were so many cases of people making millions of dollars doing this work. The economics have changed. You've talked about the newscasts and the news broadcasts going cheap, easy, trying to do it on. We've talked about the audiences diminishing. How does, from your vantage point, from an economic standpoint, when it comes to how the newscasts and the news business works in Chicago, has it diminished? Have we seen an economic downturn when it comes to the news business?
Well, you know, there is unquestionably an economic downturn when you go year to year. But like when I'll be negotiating a contract, someone will say, do you realize our sales are not even what they were in 1960? And I'd say, yeah, but in 1960, you were making a lot of money. So yeah, I assume you're still making a lot of money. But there was this, everybody thought it was a license to print money to be in this business, because each year the advertising rates and number of advertisers
went
and
up.
viewers would expand. And now we are in a period of contraction. And like I said before, you know, it's so dispersed. There's so much competition to get these advertising dollars. So I guess the answer in a word is yes, we are in a contracting period.
Is it hard for you to negotiate for your clients knowing that? Meaning that every time you're going to talk to a news director or general manager, they're going to say, I don't have the numbers I had, I don't have the advertising dollars, we're going to have to take a significant cut. All the kind of things that companies will say to the talent. Is it hard, I mean, to figure out what's true and what's not? When
it would be hard if you believed it all. But just like the agent may exaggerate the worth of the client, they may exaggerate the depth of the depression. But the fact is that people who are stars and have recognition and market credibility are still entitled to good payment. And, you know, you mentioned Skilling. I mean, all the research shows that loads and loads of people watch WGN because of him. I happen to represent Mark Giangreco and Allison Rose. There's two other examples of people who are, you know, actually bring in viewers and keep viewers.
They're the face of their news, right.
But it's totally different for somebody who's a run-of-the-mill reporter who comes to work. And it used to be where if you take one from Channel 5 and put them at Channel 2, you know, someone would give them a $10,000 or $20,000 or $30,000 raise. That's really not happening, anymore, because it's pretty hard to say I'm watching because of Reporter X. It's the front people.
Joel Weissman, you know, as we said, coming up in January, you're going to celebrate 40 years of hosting Week in Review on Channel 11. I mean, what is that? And I kind of asked you right at the beginning of the show, and I like to sometimes ask the same question at the end. Now that you think about it, we've had a chance to reflect on your career for an hour. What does that mean to you? What does it mean that you have had the consistency of broadcasting here in Chicago for 40 years?
Well, you know, I take it as a great honor, and it's an honor beyond just being on the air, because I've enjoyed a lot of trust at Channel 11, because I pick the topics that we discuss. And no one's ever told me, you must discuss this, you can't discuss that. A producer invites the guests. But I think that trust is beyond description. It's that great. And I'm very, very flattered to have it and honored to have it. And, of course, I'm honored that people seem to like what we do. We've been on for an awfully long time, and we have a very loyal and sometimes actually expanding audience, depending on what day it is. And it's somewhat comforting that there is a actual market for what we're doing. People actually appreciate it.
Yeah.
And tune in.
Joel Weissman, the host and senior editor of Chicago Tonight Week in Review, which has been on the air for 39 years, 40 years in January. Joel, also a lawyer, represents media in town. Joel, thanks so much for being my guest at Big Table. Really appreciate it.
Boy, I really appreciate you letting me toss out all my biases and do a bragorama here. Thank you so much, Justin.